Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
You are listening to Castles of Cryptids, where the castles are haunted and the cryptids are cryptic as fuck. And I'm Alana.
And I'm Kelsey.
And you are listening to episode 138. And we're happy to be back. And yeah. We missed you guys last week.
It was sorry for the delay.
Yeah. A quick featuring of one of our other Darkcast podcasts, which is always fun because it sometimes gives me a chance to kind of like check out what they've got on offer, and we're always featuring different ones Darkcast on like a rotating kind of thing every month. So we put out that one by Hands Off My Podcast, who features a lot of like missing and like minority cases and stuff, which is really cool. Especially we didn't really like sometimes I don't pay attention to dates, like when it's like, oh, it's like January was stalking crimes, like like month or whatever, and then I forget sometimes that like February is like Black History Month and stuff like that, so then I forget that we could feature cases in a theme. You know me, I always think of themes when we get to like dates and stuff.
I tend like, to around holidays like Christmas and New Year's and Halloween.
I always like to a little bit, but then it can get sometimes things get pushed back, like with our schedule now where I'm like, okay, so we were gonna put one out that around the 15th that was gonna be about betrayals, because I was thinking it comes out on the Ides of March, but it's still gonna be a good episode whenever it comes out, because that's always a fun topic. It's not like super tied to a theme. And I think you don't always want to be like super tied to a theme or like even necessarily talking too much about what's like going on at that date, because then if you go back and listen to things like a bunch of episodes during like COVID and that's all people talk about, you're like, I don't need to go back to that time.
That's fair.
It can be a lot, but what's going on with you? How was your day?
Not much. I had to return something to Amazon, and in my options on like sending it back, they had the option that would cost the same as if I went to a post office and tried to mail it back, is have somebody come to my house and pick it up. And I was like, sure, that sounds like the laziest option. I love it. And then
I haven't done this before.
No, neither have I. And the window they gave me to pick it up was like fairly narrow, and I was like, this will be good, it's like early and then I can leave, because I had some stuff I wanted to do. Well, they were like over an hour late, and it just kept saying it was delayed. And I was like, okay, well, now I don't have enough time to go out, because it says you can't just leave it. Like, you have to be there in person to hand it to them. You can't leave it.
It's like waiting for the cable people.
So, that was very annoying, because it basically messed up almost everything I was planning to try and do today. Which was a lot more running around and getting stuff done on my day off. So,
a day off during the week, which is a precious thing that
you
come to realize.
Especially because I work, I was working most of the last week, and then, or like most of this week, and now I think I have 3 days in a row again. So it was like this one day in the middle was... I wanted to do so much and it didn't work.
You start working Monday to Friday, and then you're like, okay, no, I actually like those days off where you would work Saturday and then get a day off during the week, because you can make your doctor's appointments or whatever. It's not always and easy some places, to get off for that.
A lot of places aren't as busy on the weekdays as they are on the weekend, so it's nice to get in.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, with the freaking snow we had earlier this week, like, Pat had ordered his, you know, his weed order, the one he gets kind of paid for through, because it, you know, helps treat his back pain and stuff that he has from all his lovely issues from being in the army, right? So he gets some that he gets to order kind of like through Veterans Affairs, but it, you know, means that it's like, okay, we put it in an order on like what, Thursday, and then for some reason it has to come from like Ontario or whatever. Yeah. So then it's like the weekend, and then what, when did we get the snow? Monday. So
yeah, I think it was getting Monday. It
on Tuesday. It was a wait when it's supposed to come like the next day, you know?
yeah that sucks. It was crazy. We got like a foot of snow, and then
seriously though,
it was really cold too.
Yeah, I asked Rain if she was putting away her winter coat, and then I said, she's like, oh, I haven't been wearing it. And then I was like, well, I should put it away because it's just kind of like hanging on the, it's a big long coat, and I don't know, it, she hangs it on the door sometimes instead of putting it in the closet.
Okay.
It just, it fits better. I don't know. Anyway, I was like, wait, I won't put it away. Watch, I'll jinx it or something, I said. And then I didn't know it was calling for snow. And then I didn't put it away, but then still the next day, freaking snow. And yeah, colder. It's like, what the hell? Yeah. It was just like, you know, +8°C.
Well, because I was off that weekend. I was off the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it was so beautiful. I didn't even wear a coat for most of the weekend. I was just wearing...
That's when it was like +8°C.
I think I wore a hoodie to go out on the Sunday, and then the next day it's...
Totally.
-30°C and a foot of snow.
30. Oh god, I don't know what weather apps like, you're looking at. I never saw it get that low, and I didn't.
It was with the wind chill. With the wind chill, it was -30. Yeah.
I think that's why I don't look, because I'm like, I'll find out when I get out there and it's fucking cold and I have to zip up my jacket for like the first time this winter.
Yeah.
Oh. Any hoozle. What else? How are you guys?
They can't tell us very easily.
No, but sometimes it's like, oh, I see you guys. We got some ratings from some different people on like Good Pods and stuff, which I was cool. Yeah, they were like some ratings for our Haunted AF episode, which I was happy about, until I had to badger my brother because he reviewed it, good episode, but accidentally rated it 1 star. So
how dare you?
Reading then, sir, I replied.
Yeah, you're bringing down our average.
I gotta give him shit, even though it happens, right? I think I told you when I saw this one author accidentally rated her own book 1 star on Goodreads.
Oh no, you didn't tell me that.
Really?
That would suck.
I ran across her like comment saying that she was rating it 5 stars and then kind of had an explanation in the comment of like, normally I wouldn't go on here and rate my own stuff 5 stars, but apparently it's really hard to take back an accidental 1 star rating on Good Pods or Goodreads, you know, the book one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. I think it was that Paula Braxton lady or whatever. She did some time travel books, and
yeah,
some of them were like, you touch the thing and you know the history of it. That's that, what do they call that, psychometry, I think. It's kind of like the psychic, and you touch things and you see their history.
Mm.
It's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, clearly I should let Kelsey talk because I'm just going to let things go off the rails.
Forever and ever.
Apparently. I'm chatty. I'm sorry.
Well, today we have some, what, like missing witnesses, people that disappeared that were supposed to be key witnesses in trials, maybe that kind of stuff coming up.
That's right. Yes. People who are witnesses or knew too much or possibly even just were thought to have known too much.
Not good.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was thinking of, I put a title at the top of my notes earlier that was like, deadly knowledge?
I just called mine missing witnesses.
Okay, see, now I want to know what yours is. Yeah, because you said witness protection last time, but you hadn't even picked your case yet when we recorded the last.
No, but mine's episode. Crazy.
Oh. All right. Yeah. Crazy Kelsey coming in with a crazy case.
Yeah, this ended up being on a few lists I was trying to look up of times where leading up to like an important trial, people just disappeared so that they couldn't testify.
Right, like you said, key witnesses. Yeah, that's a dangerous position to be in.
It can be, for sure. Mm-hmm. So this is the case. It centers around this Marvin Gabrion, and he sucks, but
okay.
He's the bad guy of this whole story. He was the fifth of six children. The parents were Marvin Sr. and Elaine Gabrion. I like Elaine.
Oh, okay.
It's cute. Oh,
he was a junior too? That's okay.
I think so. There was no junior like by his name. They just like didn't list it that way, but I would assume he probably was, at least when he was younger.
Okay.
Yeah. His father was described as an alcoholic who's reported that he ended up abusing him. And I guess both of the parents were often absent from the home, and it left their eldest daughters to actually take care of most of the younger siblings in the house.
Oh, no. They were forced into the parent role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sucks.
Parentification, I think they call that these days.
Okay. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
His sister Yvonne recalls a time where she witnessed, or somebody witnessed, their mother actually throwing a butcher knife at their dad. So it also sounds like it could be pretty like fiery. Physical and like volatile in that house too, not just that they were like absent parents, but
yeah, you don't want to get caught in the crossfire of a butcher knife getting thrown across the room. They meant to hurt them or not. Because, like, stuff can happen, I'm sure, in the heat of the moment. But if someone's in real
throwing
danger,
throwing knives is not good.
No. You have to pick that up with some serious intent.
So that's a little bit I could find about, like, Marvin's life growing up. But next we'll talk about Rachel Timmerman. So this is August 1996, 19-year-old, or she might have been 18 at the time. I'm not really sure when her birthday was. But Rachel Timmerman, she was a resident of Cedar Springs, Michigan. And she reported to the police that she had been raped and threatened by Marvin Gabrion.
Oh,
yeah. She told them how the previous evening she had been invited to a card game by a family friend, so like somebody she knew, named Wayne Davis, along with a classmate of Rachel's that was named Mikey Gabrion. Davis and Mikey arrived to pick up Rachel along with Mikey's uncle Marvin. So it's the four of them in the vehicle. So that's how Marvin gets dragged into this. On the way to the house to go to this card game, Marvin ended up forcing his nephew Mikey and the family friend Davis out of the car, and he left with just Rachel in the vehicle, where he took her somewhere and then raped her. She told police that he had threatened to kill her and her baby. So she has, this point, her baby was only like 2 months old. He threatened to kill her and the baby if she pressed charges or said anything to police.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
She just gave birth 2 months ago when that happened?
Yeah, it said she had a brief relationship with a classmate. It wasn't... Yeah, because some of the reports it, like, alluded to, and they were like, yeah, and her baby, and it seemed almost the time that, like, oh, was this, like, his kid? But...
That, yeah. Yeah, yeah, well, when he said, end your baby, that was my first thought, too. Is he threatening any possible result of this unholy
So
union?
She had, she had only given birth, like, a couple months ago.
Oh, that sucks.
And, yeah. So police, thankfully, like, believed her. I think they ended up talking to Mikey about it, and he came forward and he's like, yeah, like, I got kicked out of the vehicle, so did Wayne Davis. So, like, they at least corroborated that side of the story.
Of, like, right, yeah, but they, like, never, like, told
they weren't
anybody
there.
About it, or...
No, they told the police. Like, the police asked them about it, and they're like, yeah, she, like, we got kicked out of the car and he left with her. Like, we don't know what happened after that, but that's what they were witness to. Police, it took a while, but they were able to locate and arrest Gabrion in January of 1997. So, like, months later, he had kind of been on the run. He didn't really have, like, permanent address.
And sorry, was he the, like, the adult, much older
than
him? Yeah,
this is Marvin.
An uncle?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. I shouldn't put so much blame on them for not knowing what to do, I guess, after he took off with her, but it sucks.
So once they tracked him down, they charged him with Rachel's rape, and he was held in jail until a friend ended up posting his bond in February 1997. So he was in custody for like about a month. Twice in May after he was released, Rachel reported to the sheriff that she had seen him and thought that he would kill her, or, like, was there to kind of, like, intimidate and threaten her.
Right.
One source did say that sometime during these few months between February and, like, the summer, starting in June, Rachel was actually in jail for a parole violation.
Okay.
Didn't really have a lot of details about that, but apparently she had a record of some kind as well.
Mm-hmm.
So jumping to June 1997, Rachel and her 11-month-old daughter Shannon disappeared just 2 days before Rachel was set to testify against Marvin Gabrion.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's awful.
Not the kid.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So, by this point, like, Rachel had filed the charges against Gabrion after she said that he had raped her the previous summer. Rachel had left the house with her daughter, telling her family she was going on a date with a man that she had met at work, and that this guy had asked, like, to meet her baby. But they had only really met, like, a couple days ago or something. And he's like, yeah, I want to take you out and bring your baby with you. So she's like, okay.
This is what she's telling her family or whatever?
Well, this is, no, so this is not the rape. This is, like, when she disappears. This is what she's telling her family, is she's supposed to be going on a date with this guy. And he asked her to bring her baby along.
Right, right. And that she told them that before she goes on the date that he wanted to meet the baby. Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah. Her family didn't really think anything was wrong for quite some time. It was like at least a few days, because shortly after they last saw Rachel, they ended up receiving a letter from her that stated that she was planning to leave town and elope with that guy she went on a date with. Some sources said it was a different guy. The prosecutor.
Okay. That shouldn't work now. It's not the 1800s anymore where you just kill people and then write letters saying that they decided to live in the countryside.
Right?
Ugh,
so because she disappeared just 2 days before the trial, obviously she doesn't show up to the trial. Then her parents received this letter, and then the prosecutor and the judge of the trial also received letters from Rachel in her handwriting, like, they all confirmed it was her actual handwriting, stating that she wanted, or that the rape allegations were fabricated, and that she wanted to drop all charges against Gabrion.
Oh no, so he's forcing her to write these somehow.
Presumably, yeah, it was actually her writing them. Another letter identified the man she left with as being named Delbert or Dilbert.
okay.
And Rachel's family believed the letters were legitimate, and that her as a result, her disappearance was not investigated at the time. And because of this, charges against Gabrielle were actually dropped.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Well, that's a kick in the pants.
Right? Just awful.
Very frustrating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It gets worse. Yeah, law works.
I can only imagine.
And it'll never get better.
Right. As a listener of true crime, you're just so primed to be so mad. Right? Like, I listened to, like, a two-parter on Sinisterhood today that was stalking and murder of a woman named Peggy. Guess what the fucking stalker guy's name was? Patrick.
Oh. Oh, great. Oh, no!
But, yeah, it was also kind of, even more terrible and a different one because they did have a relationship at one point, but he basically started becoming obsessive before she even broke it off. And so, like, it doesn't always fit the same pattern of, like, completely unrequited love or going insane, like, when you break up. Like, he was pretty crazy from the get-go. It was, like,
probably.
So frustrating how, you know, the police just, like, really kind of failed in being like, well, we can't do anything, you know, till something happens or till you're dead kind of thing.
Those ones are some of the worst ones. When they do everything they can to report it to police, and the police, not even sometimes that they don't want to do anything, it's like they can't do anything until the worst happens. And then
laws really aren't there to back you up with it and stuff. And it'd be worth covering for sure. They did a really good job on it, but it'll piss you off, that's for sure. Fuck yeah.
Okay, so jumping ahead, it's a month later. They actually discover Rachel's body in Oxford Lake. This was July 5th of 1997. Her body's found by two fishermen. And it, like, doesn't have a lot of craziness, but the details it does have is pretty bad. It said that her body had been chained to cinder blocks. Her hands had been cuffed behind her back, and her face was wrapped with duct tape.
Coroner, it's never gonna be good, but man.
No. The coroner. The coroner ruled that she was actually alive when she entered the lake and had actually died from drowning.
No, please no. That's really heartbreaking.
They never found, like, her 11-month-old daughter Shannon's body, but she's presumed dead,
like, as it stands today. I forgot about the kid for 2 seconds. That is so horrible. I really, really hate this case.
Yeah. So Marvin Gabrion was obviously the prime suspect in her death because they knew, like, she's supposed to testify against him, so obviously he's going to be the main suspect. They executed a search warrant on his home that ended up revealing keys to the padlock that was used for, like, the chains that were around Rachel's body.
I mean, as if we didn't already know he was an idiot for being like,
he's a very idiot.
This will keep me in the clear and looking very innocent. Right? I'll just kill the girl that I allegedly raped, which I obviously fucking raped. going to say it.
They found the padlock along with concrete blocks that were stained with this paint or whatever that was also found on the ones, like, that were used. So they, like, they had the lock, now they have, like, this paint evidence, and Marvin's nephew Mikey also directed police to a campsite that he knew his uncle frequented. And that's where they discovered some bolt cutters, chain, duct tape, a woman's hair clip, and then nipples for, like, a baby bottle. So presumably that's where he, like, had at least, like, held her. If not, maybe that's where she was raped as well, was at this campsite, because they said they found his tent and that kind of stuff there. It's pretty remote area.
Part of baby bottles, as if the baby was going to be cared for, which is
I don't really know what was up about that.
Yeah, what the fuck? Did something like, I mean, ugh, they never have a good plan if they're obsessed with someone or whatever it is. It's like, what are we going to do after the fact? You don't know. You obviously, you're like, if I can't have her, no one else can. And if she's going to say something bad about me, then I'm just going to kill her.
Yeah, I don't really know what the thing originally was. I think like raping her was just an opportunity, and then it just kept escalating from there. So Gabrion's neighbors reported that he had a handyman named John Weeks. So they actually reached out to Weeks, and they couldn't get a hold of him, but they did talk to his girlfriend, who identified Gabrion as a man that she knew by the name Lance, not Marvin Gabrion. She thought his name was Lance. Mm. And she told police that Lance had left the area with her boyfriend Weeks, and she hadn't heard from Weeks, her boyfriend, and was unsure how to get a hold of him. So now her boyfriend's gone missing, which is supposed to be like his handyman. So like now another person associated with Gabrion's gone missing. She also told police, not only like her boyfriend's missing, that she had once overheard him on the phone with a girl named Rachel. And when she had asked him about it, he said he was doing a favor for Lance. He said he was doing it for Lance, who was interested in being set up with her. Authorities at this point came to believe that John Weeks was the mystery man that Rachel had gone on the date with the night she was last seen. And it was all like prearranged by Gabrion. So it was like a full setup. That date, everything was a setup. It wasn't, because it wasn't John actually Weeks
has a girlfriend already and was just helping his friend out.
Yep.
I wonder if he was really complicit then and knew what he was gonna do to Rachel.
I think at some point he knew.
I mean, you gotta know that's not gonna be for like a completely clean reason. I need you to pretend to be like a fake date, you know, for something completely innocent. It's like, what? I'll be your wingman, but like, what?
Yeah.
You want me to dig a 6-foot hole and then what? Like, no thanks.
Right? So police searched for, because of this, like, remember the charges were dropped for Rachel's like rape. So now they have her death. Now they have the disappearance of John Weeks. So police ended up searching for Gabrion for like another 2 months, trying to interrogate him until finally this tip came in that he was set to receive a social security check from this post office in Sherman, New York, which is like out of state from where they are. And FBI agents covertly staked out the post office and he was arrested as he was leaving it. So it was like surprise arrest out of state and everything. Like,
that's cool. Why you don't go to the post office. It was funny you were talking about getting something picked up from your house to return. Yeah. Because nobody wants to go to the post office anymore.
No.
But like, I love
not
that
if
when
it
they
costs
them
me the same.
It cost you all your time though, didn't it?
Oh yeah. I was like, fuck. Maybe I should have just canceled him and like, I'll drop this off.
That was off the anyway, yeah. You were waiting around. I was like, it's like for the cable guy. Like, you're stuck at your house. That sucks. But no, it's so funny when they get them when they got caught doing something so mundane, like for like being pulled over, like for a parking ticket or whatever, and they find out they're like fucking Ted Bundy, and you're like, oh, jackpot.
So now he's arrested again. Charges were made against Gabrion for Rachel's death. He was not tried for Shannon's death, though court documents describe her murder as virtually undisputed.
Oh.
So like,
I mean, Rachel wouldn't have let, you know, her kid go probably dying to save her, I'm sure. Just as a mother, I don't know. Like,
So if you thought that was the end of Gabrion's story, of course not. He's also the main suspect in several other disappearances. Gabrion lived in a house owned by a man named Robert Allen, who went missing in 1995, so like 2 years before this all happened. Gabrielle continued.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I guess another man? Wait, because this is now, like, the fourth person, I guess? If...
Yeah, this is Rachel, the fourth person.
Kid, John and him? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But this guy would be the first. Gabrielle. Right. Yeah, he went missing in 1995, and Gabrielle continued to cash Alan's social security checks and lived in his house until 1997. I don't think he lived there all the time.
Yeah, but the checks were getting cashed, yeah.
That's yeah, so that might have even been whose check he had been picking up in New York when they arrested him, because they do charge him for, like, social security fraud. So that's fun. And then Wayne Davis, so if you remember, he was Rachel's friend that had in, was going to go to the card game with them, and he testified to police, like, that he got kicked out of the vehicle and stuff.
Okay.
Wayne Davis himself went missing in February 1997. Davis was scheduled to testify against Gabrielle at Rachel's rape trial. So this is before Rachel even disappeared. Davis's residence was undisturbed aside from a stolen stereo system, and it was determined that Gabrielle had attempted to pawn it. Like, it was found in his possession when they arrested him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gabrielle's trials in 2002, because he was arrested in 1997, and then he was held until, like, 2002. It's, like, quite the delay.
Wow.
But
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, like, 5 years. They ended up receiving national attention for both the brutality of his crimes and for the controversial sentence that he ended up receiving. Yeah, there's a lot more information about the sentencing, but the prosecution presented testimony from multiple witnesses who described Gabrielle's long history of violence and sexual assaults. Two witnesses testified that their homes had been set on fire following altercations with Gabrielle. And
okay.
Yeah. What? So he has, like, full on, like, witness intimidation and all that shit, a long history of it, which is crazy.
Yeah, talk about a list of priors. Like, yeah, he's got a rap sheet, this dude. He's obviously quite the scumbag.
Yeah. Another woman described how he pointed a rifle at her and her two-year-old son, and then ended up following them in their car. Like, he was following behind them both in their vehicles for, like, several miles.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then evidence implicating him in multiple missing persons cases was also admitted to his trial. So that would be, like, John Weeks' disappearance, the disappearance of Wayne Davis, the disappearance of that Alan Roberts, I think his name was.
Holy.
Or Robert Allen, sorry. So, like, those three, even though they weren't, like, material to Rachel's death, I guess, they were also admitted, being like, he needs to go away forever, he sucks.
I know, I hate it when they're like, well, that shouldn't be admitted to a trial because it's not relevant to this one. It's like, really, when they were caught, or say almost caught, killing people in their past, I always feel like that's a little bit relevant, at least, to if they could kill in the future. And, like, what the hell? Okay, I'm just trying to keep this one all straight. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot. I know. Sorry. It's a lot of names and everything.
No, it's crazy.
So the trial also made big headlines for Gabrielle's behavior during it. The judge denied Gabrielle's right to fire his counsel and defend himself, like, be his own lawyer, due to his erratic and disruptive behavior.
Wow. Okay, so he tried to represent himself and the judge said no.
Well, they denied it.
Too crazy.
He asked if he could, and he wanted to fire his counsel, and the judge said no, because this is awful. Like, listen to what he does in court. In full view of the jury, he punched his defense attorney in the face and committed at least 40 major infractions.
That's a good look, buddy.
During the trial, Gabrielle filed multiple motions using abusive and obscene language. He accused the judge of sleeping with and impregnating 13 and 14-year-old girls, and called his lawyer and the judge satanic and Hitler. He should definitely be his own lawyer, right? He'd be great at it.
He seems the type that would want to be, you know.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah.
As soon as you hear they want to represent themselves, you're like, oh, okay.
I did read a thing that said his IQ was, I think, 121. Like, he was
That's on the higher side, I believe.
Yeah.
Although.
I was like, what?
We know that test is,
yeah.
Not the greatest barometer, but geez.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem all that smart.
No, he's wild. I don't know. So, yeah, meanwhile, he's doing this. His defense was trying to argue that his behavior was the result of multiple car accidents that had caused brain injuries, as well as from his troubled childhood.
Oh, that's why he wanted to represent himself. He was going to go that route.
I think so.
Blame the childhood.
Yeah. Since Rachel's body was found on federal land, it didn't matter that Michigan, where he was being tried, had abolished the death penalty. And as a result, Marvin Gabrion was the first person sentenced to death by a federal court located in a non-death penalty state since the federal death penalty had been reinstated in 1988. So,
oh, weird.
Yeah.
Kind of like a loophole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like a national park kind of lake thing. So because she was on federal land, they're like, we override you, so even though you don't have the death penalty, we can sentence him to death at the federal level.
Federal land in a non-death penalty state. Okay, yeah, that is weird. You don't hear about that. I've never heard
that. No. And he was the first person to be sentenced in that. So, and it had been almost like, well, it had been, what, 14 years since the federal death penalty had been reinstated, and he was the first person it was used against that, like, wouldn't have had the death penalty because they were in a non-death penalty state. So, yeah.
You said they got rid of it in 88?
No, they brought it back. The federal death penalty was reinstated in 1988.
Oh, God. Yeah, that seems barbaric, but okay. I'm more on the side of they find so many innocent people. I can't really be pro capital punishment. Although I feel like deserve it, but it's hard because, you know, there's,
I feel like there has to be absolutely no question. Like, they have to have done like 10 plus crimes. That's like DNA, everything. Otherwise, no.
which is hard sometimes because, you know, the justice system as it is in even every developed country, like, in Canada, it's not all that much different from the States, really. We're very similar. People often say, oh, America, this and that. And we'll be like, yeah, well, Canada's like, we're right there. Yeah. We're like, we often follow suit to our southern neighbors. And like, yeah, not the court system is definitely different. And like, I don't think ours is like, what, life sentence is necessarily
like 25 years.
Is that in America, though, or is that here, too? Because I'm always like, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
They always talk about America's harsh sentencing and blah, 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 blah. So, I don't know. But, yeah, that dude definitely a piece of shit. So,
oh, yeah.
I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, so he was sentenced to death penalty. He was also convicted of that Social Security fraud. While he was awaiting trial, he was sentenced for that in July of 1998 for using Allen's checks. And he was sentenced to 5 years in federal prison. Well, by the time he basically received the death penalty, he had already served 4 out of 5 of those years. So, whatever. Finally, on July 5th, 2002, exactly 5 years to the date of Rachel's body being found, like the exact date, canoeists found Davis's body in Twinwood Lake, another body of water in the same national forest where Rachel was found. So this is Wayne Davis. He was the other witness that disappeared that was also supposed to be at the trial. This was before Rachel disappeared.
And were they like actively searching for him at that point? Or was this just kind of a weird coincidence?
Like, these canoeists were just out canoeing and they just found his body. Yeah, I didn't know canoeists was a word, but That's what it said in the article. I was like, I have to include that. Because we're gonna learn a new word today. Canoeists.
Were they portaging? I know that's when you get out of the like river and carry the canoe.
Oh no, I don't think so. I think they were in the water.
All right, but that's a fun word.
Yeah. So his body, Wayne Davis, was found in a body of water in the same national forest where Rachel was found. And Davis's body had also been chained to cinder blocks.
So he was found 5 years later, you said.
5 years later. Damn. So Rachel presumably could have been found 5 years later instead of a month after her disappearance. Which would have been really bad, because I feel like he definitely would have gotten away with everything then, if they hadn't have found her so quickly.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, because charges has been dropped, nobody was looking for him until they found her.
When people's memories start to become fuzzier the longer time goes on, for sure. It's way harder uphill battle for the poor cold case detectives.
But it's crazy. It was exactly 5 years to the date of when they found Rachel's body. They found Wayne Davis.
That's a synchronicity. Yeah, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah, and it was right around the time he was getting sentenced too. Because his trial was in 2002 and they found Wayne Davis's body in July of 2002. So it was fuck you.
Poetic almost.
Yeah, exactly. So updates for the other cases he's tied to. So John Weeks, that handyman, the guy that was presumably set up to go out with Rachel, his whereabouts are still unknown. It's presumed that he was a witness to Rachel's murder, and was somewhat involved. And Gabrielle was the last person to see him alive in June of 1997.
So we don't know, because I don't trust this Gabrielle guy. He could have killed him too. Okay. Just wondering.
Presumably, he did kill him. In 2006, Rachel's mother said that she would prefer to spare Gabrielle's life if he would just tell police where to find Shannon, the baby's remains. That was according to the Associated Press.
Say it again.
The mother said that she would prefer to spare Gabrielle's life if he would just tell police where to find the baby's remains.
Okay, yeah. She'd rather take the death penalty off the table if she could find the... Yeah.
Yeah. According to court documents, while Gabrielle was awaiting trial for Rachel's murder, he gave another prisoner a map of Oxford Lake, where Rachel's body was found, on which he had written body of three, one found. So they kind of believe he's referring that Wayne Davis was there, Rachel was there, and Shannon would be there, and that one had only been found at that point. Yeah, because they had
really bad
Wayne
grammar,
Davis's.
Though.
Yeah,
body
right?
Of three.
One found, yeah.
Body of water?
Yeah.
Three in it.
Three bodies, one found, yeah.
You know me, I joke because it's uncomfortably horrible.
Yeah. I'm almost done.
Okay, great. No.
The court documents also said Gabrielle told two inmates that he had killed the baby because there was nowhere else to put it.
Sir.
You fucker. You told him to tell her to bring the baby. You knew what you were going to do. You don't then just be because you could have spared the baby's life. You intentionally told her to bring the baby. Otherwise, she wouldn't have brought the baby on a first date.
Oh, that part is so niggling at me every time you say it. Yeah, I'm like, that is so bizarre. It's unfortunate that red flag didn't, stop it in its tracks.
Yeah, I thought it was really
what?
Weird.
No, it's a first date, how do you even know I have a fucking baby? I'm like, wouldn't that come out later? Anyway, it's so bizarre and so
sad. They had met at her place of work, so maybe she had told him that she had a baby.
At that point?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay.
But presumably it was John Weeks, it wasn't Gabrielle, so I don't know.
They're really trying to fucking double time her, screw her. Yeah.
And then Marvin Gabrion remains the main suspect in the disappearances and assumed deaths of Robert Allen, John Weeks, and Shannon Timmerman, as wow. well as being the killer of Wayne Davis. But he has never been charged for any of these disappearances or even for Wayne Davis's death. And all of them actually remain unsolved, like officially listed as unsolved.
No.
Yeah, so he's never been charged for Wayne Davis's death, even though like the cinder blocks and everything were the same. And they said he was found in a similar manner. So like presumably he could have been chained up and everything as well.
And then
they just never did anything about it.
Yeah, and you said they never found the John Weeks guy either?
Nope, and that Robert Allen guy that disappeared before everybody else that he was cashing the Social Security checks of, they never found him, and they never found
Yeah, they're all tied up in it. Like, it's gotta be.
That's why I'm like, so many people, they're like, this dude's a serial killer, and they're all fucking witnesses. Yeah. Everybody was a witness to something, and all of them disappeared.
Everyone. Ah! They all knew too much!
Yeah, it was crazy. It's like,
just because they happen to be, I mean, like, you can be friends with some petty criminals, but they're not all necessarily going to stab you in the back and fucking...
Or drag you into your mess.
Yeah, chop you up into pieces. Like, my God, I've been friends with some less than savory characters, but it didn't, like... everyone's not all the scum of the earth, and then you can't just tell by looking at someone, obviously, right?
Yeah.
They could be, like, look like the most upstanding citizen and then still, like... turn around and they fucking stab you to death. You're like, okay.
Yeah. I just thought this one stood out when I was looking at all the lists, because I was like, how many witnesses did he kill? I'm like, he killed like 3 witnesses. Like, that's a lot. And they were all at different times.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's am a I lot editing of... this one? I feel like I'm gonna have more thoughts if I when I hear this again. I need to digest.
Maybe, it. Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty crazy when I was reading it. I was like, this one stood out. I was like, I have to do this one. As twisty as it all was. Yeah. Just like everything just kept snowballing, and then everybody gets fucking killed. Like,
yeah. You have to be careful who you, I was going to say, work for, work with. I don't know.
Yeah, be friends with. Don't, if somebody asks you to fake date somebody, don't do it. Because he killed that guy too. That was John Weeks. It's just his friend.
And then, like, you know, clearly, like, Rachel, as women, we're almost always taught to be on our guard. But you can't always be out for every snake. Especially if they hire other people to be a fake first date for you. And all this stuff that you're like, not expecting someone to go to the lengths to do that.
Right. I think one of the sources even said she had told her parents she was super excited to go on a date with somebody because she didn't think she'd find somebody that wanted to go on a date with somebody that had an 11-month-old.
Yeah, don't bring it up. That's a second date kind of, you know, you don't have to put that on your dating profile. If they're a good enough guy, they can deal with it when you tell them on date number 2 or 3. Not that I'm saying, you know, it's obviously not her fault.
But no, not at all. She was completely manipulated
everybody. I often think when hearing true crime cases, you know, like other people will say on podcasts and stuff, like, I've made decisions where it's like, I'm probably lucky to be alive, right? Like, you hang out with different people, you never know what someone's going to do. You don't know what everybody you go and party with and, you know, that introduces you to everyone else. Like, even a small town, like, shit happens, but, damn. Okay, now I got to follow that case. What the fuck?
Yeah, snap. Good luck.
Well, I'm going to need a little break then.
We'll be back for part 2.
Well, all our longtime listeners will definitely know that recording a podcast is not always easy.
Nope.
So you better believe, like, when we find something we like, that we're going to probably stick to it and not look for anything else. So, that's one of the reasons why I love Zencastr. When we tried it, we were like, okay, finally, I wanted to have the video And it's what, up to 4K video, which is pretty effing cool. I can see every pore on Kelsey. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope not.
But it's great video and like just really easy on this one. So like once we stopped recording on our phones, I was like, yeah, this is the one for us. So even though sometimes our computers fuck up, it always comes through for us in the end because we've never lost like a recording, knock on wood, and anytime we've had to use it, it's just been really great and really easy, and everything's just recorded when we wanted it to, which is, you know, it's a lot to ask for when you podcast as much as we do.
Yeah. It's nice that each of us has our own separate audio recording that you can download and edit. So it makes when one of us doing something or has something, it's easy. You can edit that out even with the other person was talking because you have two separate tracks that you can edit. Yeah, it's one of the reasons we love Zencastr. It makes it a lot easier. And the audio quality is also a lot better than any of the other programs we tried using in the past.
Yes, it is the best. So go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code CRYPTIC and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan.
We want you to have the same easy experience as we do for all our podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Keep it cryptic. All right. Well, welcome back to part two of deadly knowledge.
Something.
Witness crimes. Yeah, I don't know. Mine's, like I said, killed for what they knew, possibly. We shall see. I had not heard of it. Okay. Just gave it a little googs to see what was out there, and I came up with the story of one Mary Pinchot Meyer. It occurs to me that I always assumed that's how you said the middle part of her name. Does kind of look like a French spelling. Gordo's been kicked out of the mosh pit for bad behavior. If anyone else acts up. My dog was briefly doing the scratching his claws on the... Well, we put an extra rug outside the door because he would do it outside the door of our bedroom on the carpet too much and stuff.
Yeah.
So at least he usually does it on the rug now. Because he hates having his toes nails clipped, so,
you know,
of course they're always too stupid long, but anyway. All right, this is the story of Mary Pinchot Meyer and Mary Eno Pinchot Meyer as she was born. No, I'm full naming her.
Oh, okay.
I guess she was born Mary Eno Pinchot into a wealthy family in New York City on October 14th of 1920. So going back a bit.
Oh,
just 100 years.
Yeah.
Right? The Roaring Twenties. No. Her father, Amos Pinchot, was a lawyer and a member of the Progressive Party, and he also funded the socialist magazine The Masses. So, he said some things and did some stuff. And her mother also was, I think, outspoken because she was also a journalist. She was Ruth Pickering Pinchot, and she wrote for magazines such as The New Republic and The Nation.
That's cool.
I know. I was like, I bet they had some lively dinner conversations.
Yeah, some nice dinner parties. She probably hated it when she was a kid. It was probably boring.
I mean, but you can't put a price on good discussion, though, because especially nowadays, it seems like you can't have a good, I don't know, debate without, like, they say not to bring up politics and stuff at dinner, but unless you, like, directly insult someone. It used to be, like, you seemed like you could discuss some of that stuff without it getting too crazy. or contentious, but she had a Mary had a sister named Antoinette, which I'm like, oh, it's almost Marie and Antoinette, it's Mary and Antoinette, and they were raised in Milford, Pennsylvania. More about her family. She was the niece of a Gifford Pinchot, who was the two-time governor of Pennsylvania.
She's a pretty known family then.
Probably. Yeah, she's a socialite. You'll see. I'm kind of burying the lead, but I want you to get to know her as a person before we find out what. you know. Because in the end, you don't want to become known for just your death, right? It sucks, you know?
Yeah.
She studied at the prestigious, I think it's Brearley School. I don't know. That's how it's spelled. Yeah. They said it was prestigious, but then they said she went on to study at Vassar, which I have heard of. And I was like, that's one of the big ones, right? Like,
yeah.
Vassar, Stanford, Harvard, Yale, all those American ones, I guess. And she went on to marry Cord Meyer, who went on to become a CIA agent, I guess. So that's where she gets the Meyer.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She's all up in the Washington biz.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Never heard of her, though. So they married on April 19th of 1944. They're like, woohoo, the war's over. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
She's probably like, what, 20? I don't know. She was born in the 20s. Yeah, 1920.
Yeah. Okay. So she's like 24. Right. Okay. She didn't get married at friggin' 16.
Nice. Yeah, I guess. Exactly. She was working as an editor at the time for the Atlantic Monthly. Oh, so taking after her parents in the journalism.
Good for her. Women in like such a good role, like editors and journalists. Like, that's awesome.
That's cool. That's one of those professions where it started out so noble, like lawyers and the ones that keep it. You know, that, like, still have their pride in it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, good for you. Because, like, yeah. You know, they can degrade so fast, I guess.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'm a little biased. I have been just reading the Prince Harry's book. And then I was like, oh, obviously he's had a contentious relationship with the press all his life. Can you imagine being a royal and you're just, like...
No, I would hate it.
On stage from birth? Like... Yeah. Yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah. No wonder, like, all those, most of the child stars, like the Disney stars, all those, like, they're all royally fucked. They're all arrested for something. They're all have some
child stars, notoriously. Everything. Yeah. Notoriously.
It's like, how could you not get, like, fucked up in some way?
Right. Yeah. Drew Barrymore. She's one of the ones where they're like, she was child star, and then, you know, obviously had a rebellious stage, and then they're like, look at her now.
Yeah, you can turn it around, but
you can. And I feel like I can relate to her rebellious stage, because, like, flashing people on David Letterman, I'm like, okay, yeah, been through the flashing phase. Okay. So yes, she got married, decided to quit work after the birth of her children. It was around this time that she took her art seriously and began attending the Art Students League of New York to study painting. I took this from an article. There will be some quotes. There was a lot of good quotes you could find, which is always nice when you can find, good articles. So her husband, Cord Meyer, was a Marine Corps lieutenant who was elected as the president of the United World Federalists. Oh, I forgot about that, because I don't know what those mean.
I've heard the Federalists before, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I've heard of the Federal Reserve. I've heard of federal. Sorry. No, I'm not going to tangent. And Mary ended up writing for the UWF Journal. So, okay. So they're both working in the same UWF world. And apparently, Cord then joined the CIA in 1951. So this was after they were married. But however, whether he had secretly worked for them earlier is not known, but it's obviously speculated about.
Okay.
As with much things that involve the CIA.
Yeah.
Sorry. After his inclusion in the CIA, the family moved to Washington, D.C., and Mary there had no problem in being critical about the CIA, although her husband still worked for the organization. So she was very outspoken, I gather.
I mean, I wouldn't love it.
They're obviously, you're not going to probably agree with everything your own government does, let alone the top secret organizations.
Ones that operate kind of with no consequence. No public consequence, at least.
Right. Under the radar, on the black books. Yeah. Black ops. They did eventually have, I guess, three kids, from what I could gather, a Michael, a Quentin, and a Mark. But, unfortunately, one of them did pass away at age 9, I believe. It was Michael in a car accident, so that was very, very hard on them.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, I believe that was the start of the end of their marriage.
Okay.
Which does tend to... Sorry, I had to move my pages. What am I doing on here? I have it printed out, Kelsey! Why am I reading it on the page?
On the computer. I don't know.
I haven't printed out my last, 10 notes. I can just read it here. It's fine. Okay. By 1954, they were living next to the Kennedys. Yes, those Kennedys.
Wow. Okay. They rich.
Yeah. They're moved into next to... Jack and Jackie's. This was not the first time she'd met JFK, however. They had met as teens at a dance. And it was a prep school dance.
Oh, God.
Went to school together.
Whatever. Save room for Jesus. With a ruler measuring the distance between their hips or something. Save room for Jesus.
Oh, probably. I think some of those religions didn't even... think that you could dance because it was too sexual.
Oh yeah, bare skin touching, damn, you get pregnant.
Put that pillow up in between you in bed. allegedly, I don't know, she apparently had another date that night, but allegedly cut in on her date. I don't know if that meant he just wanted to dance with her or whatever, but
scandal.
That's what everything said. One of the pictures that I did put up, because I was like, there's a couple pictures, and there's one of her and her wedding to Cord Meyer, and it's very 40s with the gloves, and she's just wearing a simple little dress or whatever.
Oh, her wedding dress is cute. It's non-traditional. It's
Little isn't floral. A patterned one? I was
it looks
oh.
Flowers or something.
It's so cute. You're you just got someone to down to the courthouse or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, she looks very happy, I thought. there was a quote that said she was a true American aristocrat. The beautiful daughter, Mary, was raised on Park Avenue, educated at the finest schools, a debutante, basically an American princess, end quote.
Ooh.
Oh, I know, right?
She's got Princess Diana hair, too. Sort of, the white, the blonde and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then, the hairstyle and the cut a little bit. I think her Mary's is a little bit longer, but...
Right. I mean, yeah, if she had been still alive in the 80s. Because sometimes the princess died, I'd be like, oh, my mom had short blonde haircut. It reminds me of her. Okay, so that's how they end up. He's CIA, and they end up living in a precinct of Washington called Georgetown. That's where they live near the Kennedys, and Mary and Jackie end up being like friends where they'll go on like daily walks together and kind of hang out and stuff. Yeah. So that's really cool. But then, as I said, they did suffer the tragedy when their son, Michael, was killed. This was in December of 1956. I have a quote about that. On the 18th of December, 56, Mary's 9-year-old son, Michael, was hit by a car on the curve of highway near the house and killed. Mary heard the screech of tires and the screams of her oldest son. She raced down the hill toward the awful scene. The driver who had struck Michael had become hysterical. An ambulance arrived, but it was too late. Mary would, for the last time, hold and accompany Michael to the hospital, but not before she paused to comfort the driver who had struck her son, her rare compassion anchored in some deeper dimension.
Jeez.
I know. I'm just like, wow.
Wow.
Totally Princess Di. Like, very, like, just, like, so compassionate. Yeah. But so begins the rift that their marriage cannot overcome, and they divorced for good 2 years later, I guess, in 1958.
Okay. That's understandable. Yeah. I mean, the death of, like, a child almost always ruins.
Right.
It seems more often than not. Like,
something they can't overcome. I find they use it a lot in... Is it just me, or is it to happen a lot in horror movies and stuff where it's, like, the premise, where a lot of times they're getting over the death of a child or the start of a movie?
Yes.
Just seems like a trope, almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously just so horrible. Like, yeah. So after that, I just have another quote that talked about how Mary continued to live with her two sons in the family home of Langley Commons. She took up art and her sister Antoinette Pinchot Bradley. That's quite the moniker.
Yeah.
And her husband, Ben Bradley, allowed her to set up a studio in their converted garage. Mary also began a relationship with the abstract artist, Kenneth Noland. Mary also got to know Robert Kennedy, who had moved into his brother's house, Hickory Hill, after John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy moved out in 1960.
Okay.
So then she, obviously kind of knows all the Kennedys and stuff. And then her name first appears in the White House logs in October of 1962. So that was most likely the start of, you know, her more intimate relationship with John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
JFK. You know, the womanizer.
Okay. I thought she was with Robert, didn't you say? Or she's just friends with his
brother. It said Mary also got to know Robert Kennedy, who had moved into his brother's house, but she's still living next door to JFK and Jackie Kennedy. Yeah.
She's okay. Kind
of very Kennedy adjacent right now. White House counsel Meyer Feldman told people that Mary was like a part of the furniture, so apparently she was there quite a lot.
Oh, I know. It's like very derogatory, isn't it?
I don't find it very flattering. I don't know why they use that expression all the time just to mean like someone was there a lot, because it just seems
I feel like
very
that's like when you say someone's like used and they're like getting pushed around and like sat on, they're just a piece of furniture in the room, like
maybe
you
it's
don't
not
really
great
pay attention
maybe I should
to them.
Yeah. I think they meant she was just there a lot, so that's why I included it, but I didn't I wasn't trying to be like you know. But yeah, it's gross. So yes, then Mary's sister Antoinette went by Tony. Cute.
Aww.
Like right. And I mean, if you're saddled with Antoinette, that's quite the moniker in today's day and age.
Yeah.
I mean, people have troubles with Alana, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I could spell Antoinette properly, so
it's very French. So as I said, she was married to this Ben Bradley guy who was apparently a close confidant of JFK. So they're all very close to kind of like the family, I guess.
So
that's why most of the articles will come up just saying that she was killed because she was his mistress that knew too much. But I really didn't want to, you know, lead with that as, you know, a way to remember this woman that seems like a really cool person. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But obviously, yeah, we're going to get to that. So she was an artist, a free thinker, an occasional pot and acid partaker. I was like, she was just ready nice. For the 60s. Oh, yeah. And I think that's why he liked her. She was very bright, spoke her mind, and a lot of people said they were had said to have had like a sort of intellectual kinship.
Yeah.
You know, got to be intellectually stimulating too. I told you I read the House of Kennedy that I got from the library. It was pretty interesting. That whole family's had a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, isn't there like siblings that they just shipped off because they had mental illnesses and that kind of stuff, and they're just like, goodbye.
Well, Rosemary had a lobotomy, so yeah, there's a lot to like unpack.
I heard about that one before. Yeah,
and then they talk about the Kennedy curse, and yeah, this definitely isn't the only death. And then you get like several of them were assassinated, several died in plane crashes. Like, it's all very
damn, yeah,
kind of interesting when you kind of break it down. I enjoyed the book, but okay. Yeah, we could definitely make it an episode about some of that stuff for sure. Maybe not so much the you know, the assassination of JFK, which has been done and done and done. It's a lot to cover. But the Stephen King book was really good. Anyway, I'll kind of touch on it because it's kind of adjacent to this, right? But so yeah, because it was kind of like well known that he had affairs, but as I was going to get into here, it's like, did the even family know that they were having an affair at the time? It doesn't seem so. The brother-in-law there, Ben Bradley, said that he didn't know. He knew she had like a boyfriend, but he didn't know anything about JFK was her boyfriend until after her death and the discovery of her diary.
Okay.
It's a little, it was kept on the down low, I would say.
I mean, how did his wife feel about all that? Right?
There's some in that in the House of Kennedy book, and like I think one of her sisters-in-law, one of the other Kennedy wives, was like, yeah they're pretty known for doing that, but you married one, you kind of got to decide if you want to live with it or not. Like, it's kind of like accepted. You'll see, I think someone compares it to like the Mad Men era. It's like, yeah very much that like patriarchal bullshit.
yeah
I don't know. It's not great.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. My next quote, this, I forget what their first name was, but their last name was Burley. And they said what was known about the affair. They said, well, it's hard to say. My research led me to believe Kennedy was a sex addict and like the Mad Men of the TV show. And she was very upper class and ahead of her time in terms of modern art, personal style, using marijuana and LSD. Very much a precursor to the culture we associate with the 60s. People knew about it after, I think.
Yeah.
I bet the people closest, the bodyguards always knew what was going on.
Oh, yeah. They always, bodyguards and the fucking maids, they always know.
Right? I'm sure they'd have something to say about her, Marilyn Monroe. I'm like, there was definitely stuff going on there.
Yeah.
That we could unpack. So JFK apparently wrote a letter to Mary in October of 1963 asking if Mary would please come visit him in Boston or on the Cape. Of course, this was 1 month before his death when you really look at it. Yeah. I was like, is that right? But you know, they're right. Like, cause it was November of 63. So it doesn't ever look like November because they're in Texas, right? When he it's weird. But this letter asking her to come visit was never posted, kept by his personal secretary, and eventually sold for almost $89,000.
I was gonna say, if anybody has a copy of that letter, it would be sold for a lot, but that's not a lot.
Right.
That's way less than I thought it was going to be.
Really? Yeah, I suppose. Hey. Yeah. We thought Beanie Babies were going to go for that.
Yeah. Like sometimes just random letters could go for a lot of money, but a letter to his mistress a month before he dies.
Yeah. Fuck,
that should be like the most money.
Well, like considering how obsessed people are, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they're obsessed with the Kennedys.
Like, I mean, like, I gotta say that's probably why I picked it once it came up. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I've never heard of those. So in April of 1962, Mary famously, I guess, visited Timothy Leary. At least it came up a lot. A former Harvard University psychology lecturer who later said she asked him how to run an LSD session, quote unquote.
I love it.
I guess he was a pioneer of the acid world. I don't know. She believed it could help open the minds of some men in power, perhaps help broker some peace through some empathy and camaraderie, which they do say psychedelics kind of help break down your ego. You know?
Yeah.
Couldn't hurt. apparently she and her parents were also known pacifists. So I do know that people say Kennedy was pretty against, you know, going back into war and stuff. And
yeah,
I don't know. It seems like the war machine makes a lot of money for people. So a lot of people behind the scenes are not against, are not for that.
Don't they say, like, I think I remember in school them saying, like, the economy is never quite as stimulated as when a country is preparing to go to war. Because there's just so many jobs and so many weapons and everything that they're building, and people are getting trained and more people have jobs and everything. It's
part of the scary things that we don't like to look at as much, because we like to condemn conflicts and promote world peace, but then, maybe I'll do a Patreon
series. So many jobs and everything. It's so scary.
Yes, and I've learned there's a whole military industrial complex, and why they'll sometimes feature like military people at the start of this fucking hockey games and stuff, and how it's all tied together, and they all benefit and whatnot. And I was going to say, this one would have to be a Patreon one, but, like, I do a series maybe on the times the false flag operations that have supposedly been led to get the Americans into the wars. Like, not just 9/11, but others, like the World War I, where they, like, sunk that one ship with, like, American, you know, people on it, so they could be like, oh, now we're in the war, whatnot, shit like that, like just excuses so that they can, you know, the rich people can get richer. Every man wants to get in the war, but all the fucking Bilderbergers do and whatnot, like,
yeah,
every time. But anyway, we'll put that one behind a paywall so I don't get targeted for speaking my mind on that. So, yeah, she was a pretty cool chick, and I just had a little bit more just trying to get to know her before her eventual ending. They said in April 1962, Mary Meyer began visiting Timothy Leary, which I touched on. He's the LSD guy. The director of research projects at Harvard University, as they say here, according to his biography, Flashbacks, fun title.
Yeah.
She appeared to be in her late 30s, good looking, flamboyant eyebrows, piercing green blue eyes, fine boned face, amused, arrogant, aristocratic. Leary goes on to claim that she said, what?
I said, okay.
I know, he's so descriptive. Did we ask for that? No. he says, she said, I want to learn how to run an LSD session. I have this friend who's a very important man. He's impressed by what I've told him about my own LSD experiences and what other people have told him. He wants to try it himself.
He wants to do drugs. Do the drugs.
Just say no. Oh, wait, that was what? A couple presidents after that? Reagan, maybe?
Yeah.
One of the wives. So she was living in Georgetown and took her daily walk along the riverside of the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal. And it was there on the 12th of October, 1964, 2 days before her 44th birthday, that she was shot dead on her daily walk along the towpath, as they called it.
Damn.
Yeah. There was an article by a Lance Morrow, a writer for the Smithsonian now, but remembers being a junior reporter at the time. He said a cub reporter. He has an article, and it was like, he was there that day. He said, it was 12:30. I was a cub reporter on the Washington Star. In the classically scruffy press room at police headquarters, I heard the radio dispatcher direct cruisers 25 and 26, which I recognized as homicide squad cars, to the C&O Canal. I alerted the city desk, drove to Georgetown, ran to the wall overlooking the canal, and saw a body curled up in a ball on the towpath.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm like, you were like there. Two men who had been changing a tire nearby told me they had heard a shot, a cry for help, a second shot, and had called the police. Wow. There were no cops with the body yet. Yeah. I was like, oh, but anyway. But in the distance between the Potomac and the canal, I saw the lines of the police dragnet closing in along the towpath from west and east. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's so weird. He's just like, because I had played there as a boy, I knew there was a tunnel under the canal a few hundred yards west of where the body lay. I knew the killer was still at large and might also have known about it. But the tunnel would be the quickest way for me to get to the other side of the canal to where the body was. I pushed aside the vines at the tunnel entrance and hurried through, heart pounding, and burst into sunshine on the other side. I approached the body of Mary Pinchot Meyer and stood over it, weirdly and awkwardly alone, as the police advanced from either direction.
And then they accused me of her murder, and I went to prison.
You would think so, but I'm guessing he's white.
And lucky he didn't have a gun on him.
Oh, we'll get to it. They don't need to find a gun to accuse the nearest black man.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, okay, so he says she lay on her side as if sleeping. She was dressed in a light blue fluffy Angora sweater, pedal pushers, and sneakers. Remember, we used to call them pedal pushers and then capris and flood pants, whatever.
Oh.
They've gone through so many different...
I called them capris.
Right, yeah, they're short... yeah, whatever. They come up to your ankles, you know. She was an artist and had a studio nearby, and she had gone out for her usual lunchtime walk. I saw a neat and almost bloodless bullet hole in her head. She looked entirely peaceful, vaguely patrician. She had an air of Georgetown. I stood there with her until the police came up. I held a reporter's notebook. The cops from the homicide squad knew me. They told me to move away. So apparently that's all that saved him.
Stop fucking contaminating the crime scene, dude.
I know, like, thank God he didn't touch something. Like, wash it up, mop it up!
Yeah.
So yeah, of course he had his handy-dandy notebook, and I guess they recognized him, so they're like, Steve, Blue's Clues! We got you. But apparently nobody else was around, I mean, other than the... What, he said there was two guys that...
Yeah, changing a tire.
Changing a tire, yeah. We'll come back to that. No one else was around except for the one man that they found nearby in a wooded area, the one black man, wet from the river, apparently from falling in, is what he said. They definitely booked him for her murder with basically no other notion of evidence. His name was Ray Crump.
Oh my god. I'd be like, yes, I heard gunshots. I jumped in the fucking river.
I'm like, I don't know what to think about that. I felt like I could have done a deep dive on his case and stuff, because
it was probably a lot.
Yeah, they didn't find a weapon on him. They never found a weapon in the area or anywhere, in fact, on the case. Sadly. He told them he had been fishing and accidentally fell in. But I guess his story did change a little bit, which made them suspicious. Like, he then said he had got drunk and passed out and fell in, not like fighting with his fishing rod. So a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, the long story short of that was he was later acquitted due to lack of evidence with the help of his badass lawyer. Fuck, which I was supposed to have her name, because she was like this super cool black lady. And I was like, what? Is that just in time for Black Heritage Month? Probably not by the time this comes out.
But... No.
Wait, I'll just see if I can bring up her name, because I meant to put it back in my notes, but I didn't. Oh, yeah, she had a cool name, Roundtree. Okay, yeah, she was this badass black lady lawyer named Dovey Johnson Roundtree, which is an awesome name.
Cool.
And she was apparently, like, yeah, a pretty cool, like, civil rights advocate and stuff, and, like, worked on his case pro bono and fucking got him off, and it was pretty impressive. So
yeah, I should never have been charged. That was ridiculous.
From what I could find, yeah, it literally could not give me any other reason why they would book him for that. And I was just like, what the fuck?
You're what?
Well, there was also a white guy there, but just because he's a journalist, but he was like standing over the body, but like, you know, because you knew him, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so Roundtree gets him off. But what spurs on the conspiracy theories is the proximity to JFK, of course, and then the timeline to the release of the results of the investigation into his death. So she died about a year or so after his assassination.
Okay.
And then she died very soon after the investigation came out, which was called the Warren Commission. It was apparently released about 3 weeks before her death. So that was like the be all and okay, we've investigated his death and this is what we found. And like, no, it wasn't the CIA. It was just, you know, the one guy and the one shooter and whatever.
Is that when it came out to the public that they were seeing each other? Or had it come out before then?
I think it probably started coming out around that time, because it didn't seem known when they were together, but I'm not too sure, to be honest.
Yeah.
But people definitely seem to think that, okay, it coincides a lot with when the investigation report came out on his death, and then, oh, it's open and shut, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The commission was apparently taken seriously. It was the Chief Justice of the United States, Earl Warren. That's why they called it the Warren Commission, I guess. And then they had two U.S. senators on the crew, two members of the House of Representatives, and then two private citizens. But they were Alan W. Dulles, the former director of the CIA, and who the, like, Washington Airport is named after. And this John J. McCloy, former president of the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development.
Okay, whatever that is. So it wasn't just like John Normal Smith from... Yeah.
Me and you.
Yeah.
Two true crime podcasters.
Yeah.
The 888-page report said that it was just Lee Harvey Oswald and only him who killed JFK. And I mean, I'm you know, I love a good conspiracy theory, but I remember reading the Stephen King book where he talked about it, the 11/22/63, where the premise was that the guy could go back in time through a little wormhole, and he was like, I've been trying to stop the assassination. And he's like, basically, like, I was forced to come to the same conclusion. Like, you know, researched Lee Harvey Oswald's movements up until the assassination, blah, 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 and talks about it a lot in the book. I do remember that. And I was like, well, you know, like, he was forced to come to the assassination, come to the conclusion that it was not a conspiracy and it was just Lee Harvey Oswald. And I mean, like, we do know that he did, like, he tried to kill at least one public figure before JFK, which is true, because he tried to shoot the former U.S. Army General Edwin Walker through his window and failed. So that was his practice run. Yeah, he, like, tried to shoot him through a window, like, just at home, and the bullet hit the windowsill. And apparently he used the exact same gun. Oh, this can't be how you say it. A Mannlicher Tarkano rifle. Looks very German. Mannlicher. But apparently it was the same gun, this kind of rifle, bought under a false name to take Kennedy's life exactly. Like a year later, rather, I should say.
Okay.
So, but if there was no conspiracy by the CIA or anyone else to kill JFK, why would Mary Pinchot Meyer need to be silenced at all? What the hell did she knew that they suspected, you know? Like, just because she was, you know, someone that slept with JFK. I mean, apparently there were a few people that did that other than Jackie.
Yeah.
So, it's very weird. It's because it's unfortunately to this day still very much fucking unsolved. I hate to break it to you guys. Yeah. And it's what, how many years fucking later? Like,
80? Yeah, that's really weird. The timing of it, like, releasing the report and their findings, and then her husband being, because it was her husband that was CIA.
Right? He was CIA for a time, exactly. Yeah. And she was not a fan of the CIA.
So, like, even if they had found, like, how they found the CIA not responsible, somebody might not have believed that, and that's why they took her out.
Like, I know, I find it hard to believe that it's not a conspiracy that killed him. Some of them are just, you hear about the main conspiracy for so long, it's almost harder to be like, oh, I guess it wasn't. You know, I felt that way about Princess Di's death, too, where it was like, sounds like the royals would want to kill her. I mean, they're you know, they're all obsessed with the tradition and stuff. But then you're like, look into it, and you're like, okay, but there's a lot of things that would have to happen. That would be like a big conspiracy. You know what I mean? You're like, okay. It's like the moon landing, right?
Yeah. You're like, yeah. No, that's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy. A weird one. Okay, so just a little bit more into the theory that it could have had to do with the CIA is that allegedly, hours after Mary's death, the chief of the CIA counterintelligence, James Jesus Angleton? Probably Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Why is the rest of it so English, though?
Yeah.
But he was allegedly found breaking into her home to look for her personal diary. And he was caught breaking into her studio apartment at the time because it was attached to her brother-in-law's home. So that was Ben Bradley, her brother-in-law. So it was like, I don't know, above the garage, or it's like a guest house or whatever. It's on his property. Yeah. So he's like, what are you doing? And they're like, we're trying to protect JFK's reputation by finding her diary. I'm sorry. I really can't say that. Yeah, in an unbiased way. So I'm like, really? Everybody knew he, you know, was a horny guy. Like,
he couldn't keep it in his pants.
He's... Yeah. I like JFK, don't get me wrong.
I've never known, like, too much about them. I try not to learn too much about politicians because I think they're all just kind of slimy.
Yeah, and sometimes they're overcovered, and so you don't, like, I'm like, I have no fucking desire to get to know any of the Bushes any better than that, you know what I mean? I'm like, no.
Not W. Bush? You wanna listen to him do speeches where he...
George W., well, He just seems like a patsy who doesn't know much, so.
No, he's so stupid.
Yeah. I doubt his stuff would be interesting. But, I don't know, JFK, like, the main reason people seem to say that the CIA or any other people like that would have wanted him dead was because he was more of a pacifist in the way that he wasn't like, oh, let's all go to war, like, with Vietnam and bullshit. He wasn't all like, war machine, you know?
Yeah.
So, that part it appeals to me.
Yeah.
But sorry, this is just the last bit. It's that with the parent breaking in to get the diary, which I guess the CIA guy kept for a while, and then Ben Bradley said he got it back when he learned they still had it, and he's just like, no, man. And then him and Tony, or Antoinette, Mary's sister, they just burned it together so nobody could have it anymore.
Good.
Yeah.
Protect your sister.
Fuck. Yeah, and your sister-in-law. And one of the pictures I had to put up there, they put a nice one up on most websites. She's kind of smiling at a party, having a smoke.
Yeah.
She's aboard the presidential yacht on his birthday dinner, May 29th, 63. The yacht was called the Sequoia.
Oh, I was going to say, is that the happy birthday from Marilyn Monroe?
Oh, probably. Who knows which birthday that was?
I've just been watching the guy with the accordion in the background, like, being like, where's the rest of him? Because it just cuts off, like, at his neck, so you can't see his head, but he's right behind her playing this massive accordion. It's very distracting. In that picture.
That I put up, or of them?
Yes. That you put up. I was like, the picture you just talked about where she's smoking and on the yacht, there's a guy playing the accordion behind her. It's very distracting.
I was just like, oh, look at her. She looks so carefree. God damn it. Whatever. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Al Yankovic is in the background.
Maybe.
I don't know. She looks happy. I'm like, oh. Yeah. Imagine how much longer and happier you might have lived if you hadn't come in contact with the Kennedys. No, I don't know. That one was like a star-studded affair. There was family members, actors, David Niven, Peter Lawford, and then, Ben and Tony Bradley and Mary. So I'm like, who killed her and why? And why don't we yet know if it didn't have anything to do with JFK? At all, because she was a fucking richy ass white woman in, you know, Washington DC that got like gunned down in the middle of the day like a freaking Tupac Shakur or something. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that is a little weird. The timing of it all seems suspicious.
And I mean, you know, I love a good conspiracy, but also I do like an answer. Even if, you know what I mean? If you can debunk that it's not a conspiracy and I get an answer, I'm like, fine. My logical brain is happy with that. But I can't find any for this one off the top of my head.
No, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
Mom.
Well, anyway, thanks for bearing with me. That one got me a little excited.
It was interesting.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you liked it. Well, what's up next week if we're on time? Woo! Clink as I clink my necklace.
Oh, was that what that was?
Apparently.
We are doing Cheers some
myself.
Woodland creatures, fairies, that kind of
maybe stuff. Some freaky fairies even.
Ooh.
I like looking up.
We're gonna the get dark freaky ones. In the woods.
Yes. Oh, hell yeah, we are. Yeah, this one's going to be kind of like the one that comes out near my birthday now. So, yeah, let's get in the woods.
Yeah.
I'm ready. And then, yes, I don't know. We just keep saying it, but stay tuned. There's definitely some fun things in the works. And
yeah,
maybe even some more collabs on the horizon. So stay tuned. Check us out on all our TikToks and everything. I will put on another one of those because now I have people that say they found us on there. I'm like, I gotta keep it up.
Oh, nice. Welcome. Yes,
Me and you are gonna film one because we haven't done any together yet. So.
We'll do it when we go out for the that beer beer thing. That's in a couple weeks.
Kelsey and I's quarterly meeting because, you know, even if you live in the same city together, sometimes it's hard to get together.
It is. It's brutal.
It's fine. We always record remotely. That's just us. And
yeah,
you guys never seem to mind. I know other people are like, oh, we're recording separately. I'm like, okay, guys, get over it. You might have a little bit of a lag. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't think I could do weekly driving. Well, it's too late. I'd have to drive. It's like half an hour from your house back to my place, too.
We live in a big city, man. It can be a long drive anywhere. It's true. Yeah, it's just, it's differently easy for us this way, so that's why we do it. But, well, anyway, until next time, I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited for the next one, but join our Patreon. Don't forget to rate us and tell your friends and keep us growing because I love all the extra ratings on Good Pods. And there's a few people that have been joining because you can join for like free on Patreon now to kind of see what the creators are up to. So some people have been joining for free to see what we've been doing. And I hope you maybe like what we're doing and you decide to partake in the content for good for a little bit.
Yes, so, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I know. We just put out our last one, so I put out a post about that when I was saying that this last episode was going to be a different one, and that was our February one, which was the food tampering, which was really fun. I really enjoyed that bonus episode. But yeah, we'll definitely, we owe a few more over there. Like, we haven't done a video one in a while, so yeah. We'll be getting on that, so stay tuned. Until next time, just keep it cryptic.
Yeah, bye.
All right. Thank you for listening to Castles and Cryptids. We love all our listeners and appreciate every subscriber, every new review, every listen, rate, and download. Our music is by Kobe Off Air, and our cover art is by Antonio Garcia. We are also a proud member of Darkcast Network, where you can find the best and spookiest of all indie podcasts. Follow us on social media, where we are at Castles and Cryptids on mostly all of the things, now including TikTok. Check out our bonus content on Patreon, Cryptid Clashes, video minisodes of your hosts making asses of themselves, Ask Me Anything, quizzes, other special episodes, and more. Starting at just $2 a month, you can get 1 to 2 extra episodes, depending on your level. We produce, edit, and research everything ourselves, and any support you can lend helps us to keep it cryptic.